I am your host, Taryn Burke, and you are listening to The Witch's Muse, Stories Beneath the Surface, where initiation and inspiration meet, and we explore the many facets of being human. Our work in the world matters. Let's talk about it. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Witch's Muse. I'm so excited. This has been such a joyful week as I have begun to record the sun, the moon, and the stars, or the stars, the moon, and the sun. And it's been such an invitation for me to come into kind of the end of our journey in season one and beginning in that fool's journey and kind of walking off the cliff. And now we are beginning to like look beyond into the sky. And so for me, it's so amazing the people that show up and kind of make themselves known as these cards and the resonance in them. So I'm going to introduce, now is it Kiko? Is that?
Yes. You pronounced it right. Hell yeah.
Yeah, Kiko. Well, it sounds Japanese. So I'm like,
it is.
Sweet. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm Japanese. So I'm like, this is awesome.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Hell yeah. Now we have a connection there.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kiko, my mom was born in Japan on an army base.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. We'll have to talk about that. I'm Yonsei, so I'm like fourth generation Japanese American. So my great grandma was from Japan. My grandma's US, my mom's US, and then me. So I'm third generation, but like, you know, third generation, but fourth, I guess, in the States, having moved because my great grandma moved quite early, which is another story for another day. Yeah. Because right now we're talking about Kiko and we are gonna kind of explore the moon. And it's so amazing to get tarot readers here. As you all know, that this podcast is first and foremost conversational. Yes and no, it's a tarot podcast. I think every episode I go, no, this is not a tarot podcast. And then when tarot readers are on here, I'm like, yes, this is a tarot podcast.
Claim it, yes.
Yeah. So it's both. And I'm really excited. And I'm just going to let Kiko say a little bit about themselves. What's your pronouns, Kiko?
So she, her, or they.
Great.
Works.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. So Kiko, do you mind talking a little bit about yourself and just your bio of the Afro Witch, which is Kiko's kind of identity representation, at least within the world of Instagram. And I'm excited to know beyond those veils. So
Kiko. So with Afro Witch, that actually started when I was in college, because I've always kind of like delved into divinity since I was younger, being like an intuitive dreamer from really young. But I never really acted on anything until my college years. And my sister had gifted me a tarot deck, actually, when I was really young. She was like 7 years older than me at the time, and always going to be 7 years older than me, but she was moving away to college. And so she gave me her old deck. But being so young, I didn't really know what to do with it until I was older. And so in college, when I started actually practicing and like kind of like getting back into that, I met another brown witch named Lindo, and she's one of my best friends. And she comes from a line of witch doctors, but also had that disconnect. Witch doctors in South Africa, which is really, really cool. But she also had that disconnect of like just not knowing how to really connect with her ancestry and like, you know, not living in South Africa anymore. So having that disconnect as well, just like living in the States and being brown. And, you know, like amongst most brown communities, like I feel like we don't really openly talk about these things, especially for how we were brought up. I was, you know, brought up in suburbia. So I was primarily surrounded by white faces. So I didn't really have a connector there. So meeting Lindo kind of opened my eyes to like, wow, our community kind of needs like, not even advice, but just someone to feel relative to, because I didn't have that growing up. So that's kind of how it started. And it's funny because going through my Afro Witch page, I feel like I in the beginning phases, restarted the page like 3-4 times because I wasn't sure of my direction, just because I didn't know what my practice was or how I connected to my practice or wanted to go about my practice. So it's funny because I was looking back at my page recently. I haven't really been on there because I've been like taking time for self away from the internet. But recently I was reflecting on the page and I was like, wow, in the beginning I was more so like looking outwardly for answers from other people. And I can see the redirection in the page of just like researching things that I've always kind of wondered about, or just like kind of going intuitively off of like my own practice instead of like seeking advice from others. And then just the water. Exactly.
The water. So much of the water. So Kiko's a Cancer, as we like talked about prior, and just the beautiful representation around water that you seem to cultivate in a lot of what you say. Yeah. And your relationship to water, which as a Cancer, as they say, that's just a huge part of who they are, the component of swimming in those waters and a component of the moon. So, and word two, inspire yourself, sparkle fingers too, but like major, just like resonance with, growing up in suburbia and being surrounded by white faces, even though I'm white passing, I have had to definitely recognize how much my life was shaped by that experience more than like my Japanese heritage. And then also not feeling like I could connect to any type of thing outside of like whiteness or white, you know, that understanding around that. Like, I always think of the media, and this is so funny why I say this, but in terms of like strong leading, like Asian women in the media, it's this like huge blank. Like I always say this and I say it with humor now, but my like one thing growing up that was like, oh, they're kind of like me, was the yellow Power Ranger, which is also just like, they were like the yellow.
Right. Power, oh my goodness.
Of course, you know,
and terrible.
It's like the '90s. It's like so not PC yet. So like blatantly, it's just, there's all these things. But just noticing that, and I love that you were able to have just someone who had the same amount of willingness to kind of go forth and also comes from a lineage, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So is the, I'm as you, I didn't mean to interrupt, but more so.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Just tracking that in. And then Kiko with, Afro Witch, how it's come from between then and now, how is Afro Witch kind of showing up, or what feels like a big part of your work now, kind of in the present? I know you're taking space away from social media, as we say on this podcast, is like the one of the highest forms of self-care. And it's mentioned multiple times on this podcast of I'm actually recently doing the same, where I'm redefining my relationship to Instagram and what it looks like. What is it with Afro Witch just kind of right now? What's the biggest question kind of for your soul with the work you're doing? Or what's the biggest question maybe for the earth soul? We have that kind of question we begin the podcast with, is just what's working you right now? And maybe it's with Afro Witch, maybe it's just with self.
I've been being really driven lately by what fulfills me intuitively and like physically, mentally. And that's why it's so important for me to take this time away, because I feel like I'm not able to share my best self and my most genuine self with the community unless I take that time to get to know myself and like what feels good and what feels right and what feels most genuine to me, like talking about. Because I mean, you've seen from my post on Afro Witch, I really like to storytell and connect the dots and pieces throughout history. I wouldn't say I was a history buff, but I do like, you know, researching and like doing the work. So I really enjoy making sure that I feel connected to what I'm learning about. And sometimes it comes in phases. Sometimes I'm not just connected to tarot. So I find it difficult because sometimes my interpretations need work and I still go by the book, because I'm like, I go in and out of phases of doing tarot because I use it when I feel like my soul needs it, or when I need to help someone else. So that's why I find it sometimes really difficult to practice like all of the time, because sometimes my soul just doesn't call to it at that specific moment. And that's why it's been important to me also to get off of Instagram, so I can like go through those phases without having that like technical interruption of like feeling like I need to sustain an image for others.
And the need to share. I know it sounds so interesting, but it's like there's this, and again, for all of you that find us via Instagram, it's like, it's an amazing tool and there's a communicative quality to it. And I want to be like, you know, I want to be really strong in my values of just like sharing should happen if it's a privilege to happen in a physical space. And I just talked to someone about this too. Some people's communities are online, and to have communities in a physical sense, like literally locally, is a privilege. And so for me, it's like acknowledging and recognizing that to be true. And also noticing that the performative or need to feel seen and in a way like validated by other as opposed to validated by self can mm-hmm. be kind of the shadow side of the internet. And I resonate with that too. And also talking to someone recently, the star card, Ari of Saltwater Stars says this really well as an astrologer. And I think the same could be said as a practitioner or someone who mm-hmm. practices magic. Is it's sometimes hard to find our authentic voice when it's so easy to notice, reflect, and kind of, I don't want to say compare, but just like see all the vast amount of information that is in the internet. Like I know for me, sometimes I'm like, where's my true voice coming in? Because I have so much of this access to kind of look at all these different things and all these different, even spells, ideas, themes. And I find that that's one of the reasons I like tarot is because it's so ancient and old and the themes are universal. So I totally, it's so interesting because I'm kind of in the similar kind of break reset from Instagram. And so I appreciate you saying that.
It's actually been really hard, especially like being a millennial, like we're all about the internet, you know? So it's like, it's been really hard to like sever that tie between myself and the internet and like letting myself know and reassuring myself that it's okay to like just live my life.
100%. Yes.
Like, not beyond. Yeah.
It's okay to live your life. That's like that's a great transition when we go to the moon, when we go to the moon card. Because the moon, you know, and as many of you know, it's probably in terms of cards of imagery, if you have any relationship to divination or any relationship even close to kind of walking that path of mystery and kind of ensouled living, the moon has like so much imagery just by even the word and just by even the shape and just by even its presence of just witnessing it, that one's unique interpretation is always just, you know, just that. It's perfect for whoever interprets it, which is why I love that it doesn't really need that much of an introduction. Like I think at this point, when folks think of the moon, they think of the emotional waves, the inner landscape of the mind, the intuitive or empathic qualities, not to be binary, but there's this, I would say more generative, nutritive quality, you know, that can exist in both the spectrum of masculine and feminine. There's a yin-like quality, you know, in the relationship to Chinese medicine. And so as we talk about the moon, because it's one of my most favorite cards in tarot, so I'm so excited that, Kiko, you're going to get to talk about it. Is this like coming home? It's like the internal return is what I like to call it. And I think, you know, the going to kind of our segment or tangent around the internet and coming in and coming out of it, it's like, I think that in itself is such an important quality of the moon is when we can take inventory coming back home to ourselves. And so I'm curious how you first developed your relationship either to the moon card in tarot or just to lunar cycles in general. Like, how did they come about? And then in what ways are you kind of utilizing, or I would really say just working in relationship to lunar cycles and the moon?
So I want to say I first started getting into lunar cycles in general when I became more aware of myself as a Cancer and how hard I feel, because I'm a double Cancer. I'm a Cancer sun and rising, and then I'm an Aquarius moon. So, so I feel very heavily all of the time. And I recognized that in high school, and I recognized that, like, the moon phases and the tides, like, worked with my emotions and, like, how they went hand in hand. And that's how I first kind of started getting into it. And then when I started practicing tarot, and I often pull the moon card in reference to myself. And, like, you know, I do a lot of emotional work. I always pull that. I feel like when I am second guessing my emotions, and that card kind of just reassures me that, like, it's okay to feel freely and openly, and, like, more so when making decisions, to trust my intuition, because sometimes I have trouble with that. And sometimes I have trouble with connecting my intuition and pairing it with other perspectives as well as my own. And the moon card has really helped show me how to feel as well as still see other perspectives without, like, not being too openly emotional, but, like, more so thinking in a sense of, like, what's logical and what's overly emotional, and, like, how can I still show that emotion and still be logical at the same time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's such that makes so much. That to me is like the, and we're going to talk about this too. And it's a, this is a layered question around the feelings and emotions, because one, some people think they're the same thing. Some people think they're different. There's mm-hmm. this idea of feelings being something that I think can come from another person. You could, that can actually be projected onto you. Emotions mm-hmm. can be something that are emoting from within, but are also kind of a general scope, and they can mean both. They can mean the same thing. But sometimes for me, when I feel like I'm feeling something, there's this really internal, it's coming from a deeper place, like a feeling, where when I have an emotion, I think that can be in either in response or on the other part of it, in reactivity to something else that's happening. It's something yes. that kind of exists on the surface. And as a Cancer, double Cancer, I can only imagine the relationship you have to those lunar cycles and understanding that coming home. And I'm curious, in the work of the tarot, how it's a reminder. And so again, it's coming back to tarot as a tool of divination, and a point of, it's a reminder. Really to kind of, to have that check-in. And I always, for me, I always use tarot as a check-in. It's like such tool to check in. And, I love using it when I have big questions, but a lot of the times it's in, like, how my week is, what am I checking in for that? It's not as specific unless I'm really, really feeling like I need an answer. A lot of the times I kind of just, like, shift, kind of sitting in not knowing, even though that's really difficult for me, but it's what I need. And and in the relationship to, like, the moon outside of tarot, have you developed a practice or a way of kind of courting or being in relationship to the moon that's outside of tarot as well?
I actually have to figure out a way to connect more so, because I feel like I was more connected when I was younger. Me and my dad used to go camping a lot, and, like, he would show me the stars when we were out. He would, like, wake me up at 3 a.m. to go watch meteor showers. So I feel like I was very much so connected to the night and, like, solar and everything. But now... I've actually, it's funny that you asked that, because I've been trying to find more ways to connect. Like, living in a city, it's, like, hard for me to, feel that part of myself with like so much going on, especially like in Philadelphia, it's like always active. So like finding the rural part of myself to like connect with the moon. So I've been like trying to take time to like, I have a backyard, thankfully. No one gets that lucky to have a backyard in the city. So sometimes I like take the time to go outside, like when it's a full moon, or just like, you know, even just like meditating under the light. I get really good moonlight in my bedroom. So even just like sitting there for a few moments and just like being thankful for where I am and being thankful for witnessing the moon at that time and just like what the rays of that moonshine is like giving and feeding my soul and being grateful for that. And sometimes it's just me showing appreciation, honestly, now that I say it out loud.
I was like, yeah, it seems like you have a pretty good practice so far.
Yeah.
Meditation, moon gazing, all that.
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes I don't recognize it as a practice. I'm just like, oh, it's just me like doing me.
Isn't that awesome? Again, another amazing point of like, I think being into magic or understanding the importance of magic is like, it's not outside of ourselves. It's like that uniqueness of who we are. And I think you, even you just sharing that in a really like open and transparent way, also with beginning saying that you don't know, and then stepping into knowing in the same part in conversation is always so amazing.
I know. I was like, wait a second. I guess I do.
I'm so about moon gazing. I think is probably one of my biggest ways that I connect. There's this opportunity, specifically with full. I really like it with crescent moons as well. There's something about riding on a bike or driving in a car or being in like an open field and seeing a crescent moon that has this quality that feels so enchanting to me. And then the power, I think, of being like filled up and kind of knowing my own power feels really apparent with a full and a full moon. And obviously outside during the dark moon time or like pre-phase of the new moon, that is a time where I'm almost like, I'm almost less likely to go outside. And it's not because I can't see the moon, but everything around me is so inwardly drawn. And I find that to be so helpful. So, and then the water, I want to go back to the water because again, Kiko talks a lot about water in her page, and it's always awesome when people come back to the reoccurring theme of water. One, because I love water and I don't drink enough water.
Oh my God.
There's like
my girlfriend is always on me about it. She's like, did you drink water today? And I'm like, wait, I didn't.
Exactly. It's such a baseline. And I want to just, you know, the resonance of the importance of water as this tool. And so I'd be curious, because the moon is in relationship to water, I'd love if you'd kind of go on, you had so much wisdom to share about water and the relationship to the moon and kind of the relationship more to the internal qualities. And I'm wondering if you'd share that with listeners, just the practice of water, some of the vibrational qualities.
So it's funny that you mentioned like hydrating, because I always talk about how being a Cancer, I have more water than the normal human being. And I always make that relation of like being a human being, you're made up of 80% of water already. So like being a water sign only like in heightens like all of those things that go with feeling water and like embracing water as an element. And it's funny because I feel like hydrating is a very important practice, especially for how you're feeling and like maintaining and taking care of your emotions, because water does so much for you, and being dehydrated can really deter you from your path and like lower your energy levels. And so hydrating actually has really become an important practice for me that I'm kind of struggling on, but getting better at recognizing when I need to be hydrated. Like if I'm feeling just even a little bit off, but I know nothing's wrong or nothing's going on. I'm like, well, maybe it's because I just haven't had enough water. And usually just like drinking water will bring up my levels a little bit. And then just like as a witch embracing water, that's definitely obviously the element that I tend to embrace more so rather than the other three of air, fire, and earth. And that's been since I was little. I always just like loved being in water and I loved how healing it is. So like taking baths was really important to me when I was younger and it still is now. And just like being embraced by water, as a whole and just like letting yourself be absorbed by another element, and letting it take over, and feeling that internally as well.
Yeah, it's the, I love, it's so interesting because I feel like every person that I really talk to, it's like, there's a few people that I know that are like, I'm just amazing at drinking water. I'm just like, yes. I'm just so good at, and it's like, so for me, it's that practice and that reminder of it. And, we had a huge snowfall here and that to me was a really awesome opportunity to collect some snow. And then I put it in like a chalice cup that I had and like was able to kind of use that as this kind of place of manifestation and potency and like snow water falling from the sky and freezing to the ground. And so that to me felt like an opportunity to connect more deeply with water. And so I appreciate that, even again, coming back to the simplicity in magic and that it doesn't need to have a lot of complicated ritual to still be super impactful. I want to, once again, I think I love that we're able to keep kind of cycling back and circling around that. And, in relationship to that, you mention, a lot in some of your work and just in within our conversation of being a dreamer. Yes. And as a lot of you may know, I love dreams. I'm like, I'm a dream geek. I love the ability to be part of the dream world and live in the imaginal landscape that is dreams. And so
my girlfriend leaving for work.
Yeah, we're not going to edit that out because love is love is good in all forms. So there was just a stage of love.
You're trying to be really quiet.
No, it's beautiful. I love it. Now, we talk about dreams and we talk about the importance of dreams. And so I'm curious what and how either, you know, lunar energy or the energy around dreams or the way you've been shaped with dreams, you know, I haven't gotten to talk dreams with many people, so there's no card like the moon card and really moon energy to kind of land us in dreams. So I'm curious, you know, of your relationship to the imagination of dreams, kind of, you know, if you work with it, just kind of in what ways you're in relationship to it, either how you were and how you are or just how you are right now, either or works.
So dreaming has always been a part of my being and my practice ever since I was younger. I think that's how I first kind of knew that I was, like of other, of like a greater power because I was dreaming really, really powerfully and intuitively, kind of beginning around like age 7. And that started with just like really vivid reoccurring nightmares. And like having those, I had like one specific nightmare up until maybe around like age 16. And then I haven't had it since then, like maybe around age 20 again. But my practice with dreaming started through my reoccurring nightmares and just, practicing being lucid at a really young age, to control my dreams and like being able to move around them to keep my anxiety levels down because I used to not want to sleep. I used to be really scared because I got reoccurring nightmares that often. So it's nice to have honed in on that and like to have been able to practice in that way and to feel comfortable now dreaming as a practice and like really feeling good about that and especially compared to where I was and like being so fearful of like what I may see in dreams. And now, since I've been practicing it more so, it's funny that we're talking about the moon and emotions and all of that, because depending on how I feel and how I am emotionally, it will affect my dreams. And I've been trying to practice doing more dream interpretation. So like, I can work that into like doing tarot intuitively and like reading myself intuitively. So I've been starting to like journal my dreams more and look at specific factors in dream. Like if I see a specific animal in a dream, I'll like look that up in the morning. Or if I'm in a specific setting or surrounded by water in a dream, I'll look that up and like specifically what the type of body of water is and, you know, all of the things that go into that. And that's kind of how dreaming has played a part in my life. And I have also tried practicing different methods of coming into intuitive dreams by like placing crystals underneath my pillow or placing specific tarot cards that I want to embody underneath my pillow or underneath my mattress. And that's really helped my dreams kind of dive a little bit deeper than the surface. Yeah. So it's really interesting to play around with dreaming too, because it's like you can do so many things, including just like saging or palloing or just like smoking before you go to bed, or even just like a simple meditation before you go to bed will like open your mind up to like move freely while you're like your subconscious mind specifically to move freely. And I feel like that works hand in hand with the moon card as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's awesome to know that you have so many of those tools. There's a couple things I'm curious about. One, I'm curious about which stones, gemstones, crystals you're using under the bed, if there's ones that you like really resonate with more. And then two, I want to speak to dream interpretation and dream recall as a practice as well. But I'm curious, first and foremost, gemstones, are there ones that you feel more called to or that you have, you know, more affinity towards?
So I usually use my moonstone, especially during like a high like moon phase. I'll use that just to dream intuitively and heighten my practice in general. But then I do a lot of like love dreaming. So I'll use my rose quartz a lot of the time, and that makes me feel more safe and like comfortable. You know, being a Cancer, I love love and affection. So I feel really connected to my rose quartz. So I'll place that under there.
I love it. I love also the connections to like the stones that are inherently more into moon-like energy or have those qualities that feel more, there's like a softening quality in those, which I love. And I'm also so curious if that becomes an interesting dance with you of becoming like so open in the vessel of that, of like being so open with rose quartz and with moonstone. It's so interesting. The utilization of gemstones for me has been like such a journey. Also since like now the information of just like where and how we're getting gemstones arises and just the quality of just sourcing becomes so important for me. So I think I'm not speaking for both of us, but I think I'm speaking for the podcast and us in a way of like, we're still really aware of where and how things are coming through. Cause that's also changing in the world of spiritual capitalism. And so I'm noticing protection is kind of my go-to when I'm thinking of using, you know, gemstones. So I find it so interesting that some, you know, like you're mentioning, it's like you use for love and this like feeling of safety. And I'm like, how can I build a wall with my chest? It's just so interesting. I'm like, okay, onyx. I mean, sometimes
it's real, especially when you're a sensitive being and you're a sensitive person and you're open to receiving anything, like any type of energy. Like sometimes protection is needed, and that's okay that you know that about yourself.
Yeah, it's like smoky quartz. Smoky quartz is like my go-to. I think I have like, if I was to have a gemstone of one that I carry in my pocket or that I carry most frequently, or is that like, is the closest, it's usually smoky quartz or Herkimer. Those are like my two, two that I really float into. And it's been so long that I've talked about people with gemstones. So I love that you're making space for that. Yeah, it's such a beautiful practice. And one, I think as a young witch, I felt such a closeness, like 18, 19, I was just like so into it. But then also there, it came with that naivety of like not understanding source. And so since then I've been really good at like taking inventory and stock, and I actually haven't bought a gemstone in like years. So I'm just noticing that stock of inventory of what I currently have, what I'm working with, how it informs me now. Yeah, because it can become one of those things, like anything with emotions and the moon, like it can become, you kind of run the risk of like not having the boundary. And then all of a sudden I'm like, how did I get like 35 of these? And I have like maybe practiced with three or four. Like what, when did this become about consumption? So in any practice, I always resonate with that. The other thing I wanted to talk about with dreams is in some of the dream practicing that I do, it's in like a three-part kind of conversation. And so one of the parts is association, amplification, and then animation. And I've just been getting deeper and deeper and doing some like dream intensive. Actually, I've gotten an opportunity to go to Pacifica to do some dream tending work with this man named Stephen Anasat, which is a really awesome. Thank you. It's been beautiful year-long immersive, and I just ended, and we're actually going for the next part. But the kind of wisdom or the technique or the delivery system of dream tending is really resonant first and foremost on that like association piece, that layer that you kind of mentioned, where you see these images and these figures that you go and you're trying to find, you know, how are they relatable in life? And it's like, I love that. I love that as a practice. And then another part of me is also careful about the practice of that, because sometimes I notice that if I'm trying to make so much sense of it, all of a sudden the meaning is like
lost.
Exactly. It's no longer like, it's almost like I have taken the imaginal realm, which is like beyond space and time, and I've like tried to make it into like a three-part sentence of meaning. And so it's I love seeing associations of dreams, because one, it's hard not to, like in the psyche, it's hard for us not to be like, I'm seeing this, and there's this association of this meaning in my life. And then there's this, I'm shifting and working my knowledge of dreams of like, and then there's this next kind of descent down where we kind of come back to the dream in real time. And so, when I talk to any other dream tender or somebody who's weaving dreams, it's like always the opportunity to know that there's so much in our imaginal landscape. And so I am so happy that you got to mention that about the gemstones and about this, about the tarot. So that can be said, I think, for tarot cards, for shapes, like in sacred geometry and colors. Like I always remember there was a time period I was really into certain shapes that had resonance, and they weren't even like sacred geometrical patterns. They were just like shapes that were created that infused into certain energies. And I remember even just like printing them out, I would put them under my bed. And so I want to thank you for bringing that into
the phase. Of course. I'm also kind of like, as I am like doing more internal emotional work, I'm coming into color magic and like how colors affect the emotional spectrum. Yeah. And it's been really wild learning about all of these things and like having, you know, specific favorite colors that you're drawn to and how they resonate into your life. My favorite color is hunter green.
Ooh.
And yes. And I feel like that comes from me, like camping a lot when I was younger and being surrounded by that color naturally, but it's also just very specifically a grounding color for me. And sometimes my Aquarius moon makes me really erratic and I need that grounding. So the color really helps me feel earthy, literally, you know, like it's a very literal sense. So it makes me feel like I'm a part of the earth, and it makes me feel like I can take a breath and exhale and like calm down, because it also resonating back to like when I was camping when I was younger, it brings me back to a place when I was calm and like looking at something that's very calming and like relaxing for me. So I like to envision that color a lot when I am going through something or meditating. That's one color specifically that I'll keep in mind.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. And the power of green, I think, in the relationship to like emotional, heart-centric places, you know, like where we can find the most. Sometimes I feel like green involves a lot of joy. Like I think of joy.
Yes.
A lot of the time when I think of green, and I have a lot of cool colors. Like most of my colors in my house are very cooling. Mm-hmm. So they're like a kind of like, I have a tealish blue here. I have like a midnight, almost like blue black in my bedroom. And then kind of like these jade greens. So I totally resonate with those cool tones. And then I'm also noticing, and it could also be, this is the reality also of the internet and like information and imagery and being so into aesthetic. Like I am in love with blush pink. I don't fucking know how that happened, but just something about blush pink. It's like this, it almost feels erotic to me. I'm like, and it's like, might be just because it's the inside of the vulva. Like there's so much about blush pink, like the deep inside of the vulva, not the outside, because we're all different shapes, textures, colors, but it's noticing that I never liked pink when I was younger. I was very into purple. I'd see purple all the time. I would have when I was little, I'd always have purple floating everywhere.
Wow.
And so noticing blush pink as this thing that's like come up so much for me. And it's interesting because there's also this like mainstream quality of blush pink that I'm like, wow, everything's like rose quartz marble and blush pink.
Yeah.
You know, what's that about? Is this like, so this interesting conditioning too. And then also feeling like, no, there's this interesting resonance with blush pink as a color. And
yeah, it's like a softness. It feels really good. It's funny that you say that, because I also just like the stigma of like, you're more feminine, so you should like pink when you're younger, you know? So, I feel like that also like detracted me from like liking the color so much, but
totally.
I've also been through, getting older and being more attracted to the color, but like in a sense of like the energy of this color actually is really great.
Living beyond the binary.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've rebuked it for so long. I feel like now I'm like, wait, this is a weird feeling because I've never had this attraction before.
Right. And I think that's, it's like, for some reason it's changed, I think. And I love, I have the same resonance. Like I never was like, yeah, pink's my color. I was never into it. And I always love that, because for me as millennials and part of the generation of that and living in such deep conversation beyond the binary. And it's like, wow, part of our consciousness as little kids was like beyond the binary in like 1987. And so I'm like, right. I'm loving that relationship has become even more apparent to me of like, colors are not specific to types of people. No. And the internal qualities that we feel and the resonance around colors. That's another reason why I love colors, because they feel like a very accessible point of entry for many people. You know, in within their own cultures, like in terms of appropriation and things that can be really harmful when taking or extracting their, with colors, one can look within their ancestries or their backgrounds or ways in which they resonate, and colors can really become a great tool to kind of dive into that conversation of what type of colors you're going to wear, or what colors are more invoked within one's cultural background or cultural ancestry. So that there can be this cool kind of sovereignty and self-discovery and color magic. And so, I love that. And as we dive a little bit deeper and we're kind of coming out on the other end, you know, you mentioned a lot about being drawn to the moon as a way of also feeling and also being empathic. And so I've definitely had a bunch of empaths on the podcast, and it's always mentioned a few times, but in passing. And so I actually want to provide a space here to talk about empaths and talk about your experience as an empath and talk about both like the deep joys and also like the big struggles of what it is to be empathic. So I'm wondering, you know, as we dive into the emotional field of the moon, empaths kind of walk hand in hand with that. And so, yeah, do you want to just talk a little bit about that as just your exploration around it and how you've gotten to know it?
Since I've been doing a lot of emotional work, and like I started going to see a therapist about like 2 years ago. We're coming up on our anniversary, actually, April. I've been really kind of honing in on how my energy affects others, because I've always received other energies so easily. And I guess this is kind of going into like the harder parts of being an empath. It's like, you know, recognizing how my energy affects others and not only looking at my perspective of how others affect me, and then also setting boundaries of when energies just like don't mesh. Cause I'm a Cancer. I try to make everything work for the most part, most of my relationships. And I have a hard time of kind of admitting to myself when something just isn't working or just like isn't compatible. And so a lot of my energy work right now of being an empath is recognizing when I need to set that boundary of this energy just isn't meant for me, and that's okay. Maybe it just wasn't meant for me, or maybe there was a time where it was and now it's not working or it's not sustainable anymore. Or maybe in the future, if it's really meant for me, it'll swing back around. And like recognizing all of those levels of like being an empath and like protecting yourself, because before, when I first recognizing that I was an empath, I just was so gung-ho to helping others, and not recognizing how those other energies will affect me in the long run. So, you know, I'll end up like super drained, and I'm like still pushing to help other people just because I like doing it. So also setting the boundary within myself of like, it's okay to want to help others, but like you also have to help yourself sometimes. And like sometimes that means not connecting with any energies at all and just like taking the time to recognize how you're feeling and how you're doing and checking in with yourself, and then holding the space for others when you can. And that also goes back into like why I've been taking steps back away from Instagram, because I like want so much to help others, but it's like, I can't help others if I'm not sustained in myself and if I'm not right in my energy. Yeah. So recognizing that as an empath has been kind of really wild. Because I've just like always had that stigma internalized that I like have to help when I can, you know?
I'm like, is that a sign of patriarchy? Is that a sign of like growing up as a woman of color? Like what's the relationship of always feeling like you have to help? And that to me, is like asking for help. I now have like really come to a point where I don't have a problem of doing it. Although I always lean on the people that I love the most for the most help, which to me is not actually sustainable. Like I sometimes lean so heavily on them that they're like, you're not even doing it for yourself now. You're just like asking for it to be done. And so there's that like interesting thing where I feel like my pendulum has now swung a little bit of like, I ask for help now, but in a way where I'm like, well, I could have actually just done that myself. So why am I still now feeling like that, as opposed to the opposite of not wanting to, or not even thinking that I need to ask for help, or trying to do it all myself? Or what I was catching off of what you were saying that resonates with me is pushing through it even when it doesn't fit. Like I'm like being like, okay, even though this doesn't work, like I can't give up. Like the idea that giving up or shifting gears is like a point of weakness, which to me feels just like a system system socialized conditioning.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's like you don't want to be you can't be the loser, because then you're like, if you lose, that it's that whole mentality, which I totally resonate with. And you say it really well here of, if it doesn't work, that's okay. I mean, it sounds so simple, but in reality,
but like, it really is.
It's like, if it doesn't work, that's okay. And I think our emotions and tapping into the intuition, which is kind of be our final spiral in of like, but the emotions are empathic understanding, because you're already receiving so much. I think it's so important for myself to constantly tap in. And then the other thing that I've noticed with being empathic is the residual effect. Like, I didn't think that was possible. Like, after being with someone, you kind of thought it was done, you know? And so I've learned a lot about like clearing my field and clearing my energy and trying to reset, even if it's a shower or a bath or lighting a candle or using some smoke medicine in some way. Like, I speak a lot about that, 'cause that feels so important of, just not noticing how draining it can be until it's over, and then it's like, holy fuck.
Right. And you can't move, your energy is drained, it's all the way gone. And that's what I had to that was really hard for me to recognize, especially because I just feel like since I've done so much energy and emotional work that like, I feel like I have so much to give. So that's why I'm like, it's fine, just like take it off. and I end up just like piling on. And then like what you said that resonated with me is I'll lean on my really close partnerships or relationships, which is not sustainable at all. And it's been hard for me to like try and find the balance of leaning too much and then just like not leaning at all and trying to do everything myself. Yeah. So I need to find that like in between, and that's what I'm working towards.
Yeah. That it's like, that just makes so much. And I think the moon, it's like, it all comes back to that idea of that kind of checking in and noticing how and which ways we're leaning. And so, you know, as we kind of come through the other side, Kiko, I was curious, just, you mentioned kind of practices of divination with the moon. I'm curious in terms of intuitive practices or things that you're focusing on now for spring into summer, if there's things that you're feeling like you're igniting coming through. And then the other thing that I've been kind of asking folks is kind of what's stirring for them, what's next? Are there projects in the works? Are there even like little whispers of seeds that are being planted that may not come into fruition, you know, with a tangible thing? But I'm always a big believer of the more I speak something into being, it tends to know, manifest in existence, I think. So yeah, I'm curious if that, one, just any spring, summer kind of rituals with the moon that you feel called to share, or even just rituals with intuition or empathic work, and then just like projects on the horizon.
So I have been actually taking this time to really hone in on some like projects that feel really deeply to me. And some things I'm working on are like talking about animals as messengers, like seeing animals that you don't normally see, just like really randomly. For example, I went with a friend to New Orleans last year, and she saw a lizard just like really randomly, just like on our rooftop. And I was like, oh, well, you should probably like see what spirit is trying to say to you at this point in your life. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And I've also been working around, food a lot, and like kitchen magic and like how what you, ingest and digest, helps you as a spiritual practitioner, and helps you, energy wise. And it's funny because it's like, it's so simple, like staying hydrated and like eating well, but I've been trying to dive, deeper into how that, really affects the body and what certain things and certain herbs do for the body specifically. And I did have a piece that I wrote recently for a magazine that connects the spiritual connotations to soul food. And like how, yeah, and where that resonates in like African American history and spirituality, specifically for the United States, and where that stems from. And I've been wanting to do a lot more work focusing around like African American spirituality, specifically to the United States, because that's where we have that disconnect of like, you know, being brought over on boats and like losing that connect from the motherland. But I feel like we don't talk enough about how our spirituality has grown here as a practice. And I feel like sometimes we focus a lot about the hurt and the pain that went through the transition. But I think it's really important to recognize what our ancestors had to do to cultivate here, because they're still very much so practiced now, especially in Louisiana and down south. And I feel like it's really important for Black Americans especially, and just like people of color to know those practices and like to make those connections, even if it's just like simple things as far as it goes, is like eating certain things and, you know, like what your grandmother used to tell you when you were younger. That's another piece that I am trying to work on. I'm like interviewing some grandmas and some people of like what they were told when they were younger, just like, you know, simple things like why your grandma used to put salt at the windows or wash the front steps with brick dust, you know, just like little things. So that's what I've been working on as far as that. And then as far as like future things, I definitely would like to get some type of like blog going to have things in one place. And then like long-term, my dream is like eventually to, get really good at my interpretations for tarot and then release a deck, later Ooh. In life. Ooh, yeah. I love but I'm it. Trying to let that, yes, I'm trying to let that like fall into place and be, serendipitous in a way so that it's like genuine and it feels good. So that's something I'm definitely not trying to rush. But it's definitely on my mind for sure. Mm.
I love that you went through this like amazing kind of from present into the future forward. So you really yeah. kind of looked at seeding that. I would love for you to come back on once you've manifested more of this stuff on food and talking about the food for another, for a future episode. So I totally look forward to it. And is there a way you'd love to close calling in anything that feels like a good closing for you before we end today?
Honestly, oh, I don't know. I'm just so grateful and I'm thankful for the patience that you gave throughout this whole process. And I'm thankful for you giving me the platform to do this because this was a lot of fun. I'm grateful for the audience that is going to listen to this. I'm sorry. I wish I put together something more like.
Hey, you don't have to apologize. This is great.
But shall we thank the 20? Because I've also, I just watched the movie If Beale Street Could Talk and how they honed in on a lot of kind of like Christian practices. And that's another thing I'm trying to do more research on of how biblical our biblical practices are still practices, like showing grace. Like, even though it's like, you know, it's kind of like a patriarchal thing and like all of this was kind of like forced upon our communities, but still very much so in Black and Brown communities, it's practice and like it's worked in a way that coincides with spirituality. So just like giving, you know, and showing grace around the dinner table is very much so a spiritual practice. So I guess me just showing thanks is how I'm going to
come. Deep thanks. Oh, deep thanks for for this and our time. And as we swirl in for everybody, Kiko can be found on the Afro Witch through Instagram. And I'm really looking forward to the other things I have coming through. Normally what we do is we offer some things for Patreon members. So hopefully Kiko will be interested in either writing a piece or offering a spell just exclusive for our Patreon tiers. So thank you, Kiko, for this.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Tara. Yes.
Support for The Witch's Muse can be found through Patreon/The Witch's Muse. Have an opportunity to dive into extended content, guided visualizations, monthly question and answers, and a look behind what it takes to make The Witch's Muse. Any tier is welcome, from your cup of compassion all the way to your creatrix community. So find something for yourself or for a friend. Look forward to seeing you on there. Patreon.com/The Witch's Muse. If you like what you hear, please go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review to The Witch's Muse, and make sure to tell your friends. Thanks so much. Have an awesome, awesome day. Thank you.